Hi, welcome to Redeem the Commute. I'm Ryan, your host of the Daily Challenges. Today's Thursday, the day we try to apply and live out what we've been learning this week. And this week we've been exploring the story from the book of Exodus in the Old Testament part of the Bible about a confrontation between Moses and Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, where Moses was asking Pharaoh to let the people of Israel, who had been enslaved in Egypt, leave. They were going to go worship their God in the desert. Really, they were going to escape, but Pharaoh refused to let them go at all. So we've heard those plagues on Tuesday. I read the story to you sort of in its summary. Yesterday, we looked at some of the trends, some of the things that were in common and repeated through the story. So today we're going to see what it means for four different groups of people. First of all, what it means for Pharaoh, what it means for Egypt, what it means for Israel, and what it means for us. Well, first of all, Pharaoh. Pharaoh is like a god in his nation. In fact, he would have been worshipped as a god. This was a nation with many different gods for many different needs who were supposed to provide for all the different areas of life important in Egypt. They would have had a god of agriculture and fertility and the sun god and things like that. And Pharaoh would have been considered a god as well. He has absolute power. He's feared. He's revered. He is like a god. And yet, in this story, we see him realizing he is not a god. In fact, God, in a bit of irony, sends Moses and Aaron, a couple members of that slave nation that they have oppressed, and he sends those two, basically slaves, to Pharaoh, and he tells them, "You will be like God to Pharaoh." It's a bit of irony there. God poking fun at Pharaoh, who thinks he's a god, and letting him know, "You are nothing compared to me. I am the god of everything." Those gods in your nation, the gods you worship and you think they impact your everyday life, I'm going to systematically show that they are nothing. And so he ruins their agriculture. He later ruins their fertility. He takes on each of the gods of Egypt and shows the people of Egypt that those gods can't do anything. Now, those are symbolic actions, each of these plagues, but they're also very, very real to the people of Egypt. The River Nile, where they get their water, where they irrigate their crops, is now turned to blood. They've been attacked by all kinds of pests. The hail has destroyed their fields. The darkness means nothing could grow anyway. This is devastating for the people of Egypt. These people who thought they were the most blessed nation on earth, the breadbasket of the world, who had the best agriculture and all the civilization that arose from that, are now realizing that although they think they are something special, they actually are not. That anything they have has come from the God of Israel, from Yahweh, from the God of the universe who created everything, not from the special relationship they have with their pagan gods. They're realizing that what they have been pursuing is actually empty. The people of Egypt and Pharaoh are realizing that the God of Israel, Yahweh, is a God for all people in every place. He's not just a tribal God who takes care of one little group and provides good weather for them and good crops and things like that. He is the one in charge of all the weather, all the crops, all the fertility. Everything in the world comes from him. Now, it's one thing for Egypt to learn that. He also wants Israel to learn that. God is about to put into motion a very important part of his plan to bless and change the entire world through a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, also known as Israel. He's about to put that plan in motion by getting his people out of slavery to freedom, getting his people out of Egypt to their promised land, where they can really be established as a nation. He's going to ask them to do some pretty wild things as part of that plan. He's going to ask them to be different from any other nation. He's going to ask them to follow him through a sea. He's going to ask them to do all kinds of things that they might not do if they're scared. He's going to ask them to escape Egypt while Egypt chases them with chariots. With Pharaoh as part of that group, he can't have them afraid of Egypt if they're going to stand up to him and escape him with no weapons to their name. So, he wants them to learn something here too, that their God, the God of Israel, is in charge of everything. Not even Pharaoh, the most powerful ruler they know, can stand up to their God. Finally, he wants us to learn something in this story, because we can act like we are our own gods. We can act like we are in charge of our entire world, that we have it all figured out or not, and that it was up to us anyway. We can become the center of our own universe. We can become our own gods. This is actually one of the very definitions of sin that I use most, that sin is when we start to worship something other than God. And you know what? Our own ego is a really natural fit there. We can pop God out of place in our lives and pop in our own sense of self, overinflated as it may be. This might not be something evident in every single part of our lives, but I think we can all identify some area of our lives where we have an inflated sense of ourselves and where we're pushing God out of the picture. Like Israel, though, God can't do everything he wants to do through and in us when there is still that area of sin that's pushing God out of our lives. He needs complete humility and submission from us. That's what he can work with. He could work with the nation of Israel because they were wholly his nation. They were the people he'd chosen to work with. And they were about to make the ultimate act of submission, completely trusting him with their lives, with their children, with their livestock, with everything they had. They were about to trust him wholly. It's that kind of submission that God is looking for in the whole of our lives. I had a small example of it myself last week, because I found myself on a jury panel waiting to see if I'd be selected for jury duty. It took two whole days for me to end up with my 10 seconds in front of a judge and to be told no thank you. I had to wait for 2 days for that, and I learned some submission. Whereas I'm used to kind of setting my own schedule and making time for what's important, whereas I'm used to really trying to make efficient processes that work and make sense, I found myself in a really inefficient, really slow process that I had absolutely no control over. I wasn't there at the courtroom by choice. I was there because I'd received an official summons. I had to be there. I had no choice. While I was there, I just had to submit myself to the process that the judge had put together. The judge was in charge there, not me. And I learned a few things about submission. Some things that'll come in handy for life as I learn as well to submit to God. To let him be God instead of trying to be in charge of every single aspect of my life as if I were God. So here's your challenge for today. Where in life do you consider yourself to be pretty self-reliant? These are the same areas where it's easiest for you to shut God out. Carefully consider what it would look like to humbly ask God to show his power over that area of your life. Don't wish a plague on yourself. Nobody should do that. But think of what it would take for you to have the same reaction as Pharaoh and to realize that you are not God. So you can humbly submit to and worship the real God instead. Ask God to show you that, but hopefully with less pain and agony than Pharaoh. Have a great one. Maybe discuss with your group what that's going to look like in your life. If you can't figure it out, they might know. They might be able to tell you where you're overly self-reliant, where you have an overinflated sense of self, and where you're shutting God out. So have a good one. I'll see you tomorrow as we pray and reflect about this topic. Bye for now.